You need to find what it is that like excites you and gives adds value to your own life or yeah. others, and try to first figure out what that is.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Repurposed. I'm your host, Jared Sebesta of Taegis Financial Group. We are a retirement planning firm based in West Central Minnesota, where we teach and inspire what we call true wealth. We believe there are three components to having true wealth. Number one, living with purpose. Number two, having impact on other people. And number three, leaving a legacy. At the heart of this podcast and at the heart of our company, that is the type of life that we are trying to inspire. If you want more information, give us a call at 320-222-4236, or you can visit us online anytime at taegisfinancial.com. Well, on this week's episode of Repurposed, I'm bringing you a conversation I had with a guy by the name of Michael Bellotti. Michael is an artist. He's based in the Twin Cities of Minnesota, and he has quite a story. He had a real rough childhood and young adult life. He was heavy into drugs and more so drug dealing. And when he was in his early 20s, he was arrested in South Minneapolis, and on his person, he had over a half pound of methamphetamine and over $100,000 in cash. Michael was charged with multiple drug offenses, including the intent to distribute, and was sentenced to 12 years of federal prison. But it was in prison that he discovered his purpose in a real unorthodox way. Michael drew inspiration to make drawings from a popular mafia movie that he watched in prison, and soon thereafter, a Bob Ross book and a family tragedy helped him realize that his talent could serve on a deeper level and give him more purpose than he had ever imagined. Here's my chat with Michael Bellotti.
I actually had an aha moment, like the light bulb moment in there. We were watching the movie A Bronx Tale. Huh. It's with Robert De Niro. It's a, you know, mafia type movie about this kid that grows up in the Bronx, and he, you know, witnesses one of the local mafia guys commit a murder right in front of him. But then he, you know, and they question him, and he keeps his mouth shut. So then this guy like takes him under his wing as he gets older. Well, you know, his dad says to him, when his dad's trying to keep him from this, you know, mafiosi family, and, you know, his dad says to him, you know, there's this one part, he's like, there's nothing worse in life than wasted talent. Hmm. You know, and like, I was watching that sitting in the prison TV rooms, crammed in like sardines with all these guys in the summer, and it's like 90 degrees in there, and all of a sudden it was just like, it just hit me. And then I started just kind of like looking around. And like, you know, I say this often, some of the most amazing people I've ever met and ever will meet, and also the worst people I've ever met and ever will be, I met in there, you know, and there's so much wasted talent and they're just sitting there stagnant.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and now here I am also. Okay. So then I just like started reflecting, like, obviously what I've been doing up until then isn't working very well.
Yeah.
So I need to make some changes. Well, what can I do? I have no skills because I did nothing but, you know, the drugs and drug dealing my whole life, basically, by choice. But, you know, and I had gotten in a motorcycle accident when I was 21. So my left arm is partially disabled, nerve damage and stuff. So it doesn't work. So my dexterity is limited. So any kind of trade that required two hands doing anything, it was just basically out the window for me.
Yeah. So you're literally kind of having this self-analysis in prison.
Yep. Sandstone. And then
wow.
A friend of mine, I don't remember why, you know, cause there's a complete type of like its own world in there. It operates and has its own form of finances and barter and buy and sell, you know, stamps are the money in there. And you know, just buy and sell things, food and this and that, whatever with other guys. Well, a friend of mine owed me like $50 or something. I don't remember what it was. While he was doing these pencil portraits, and I was like, "Would you just give me some drawing supplies from the Blick catalog?" So he did. He ordered me a bunch of mechanical pencils and a book, and I started doing pencil drawings.
Wow.
Because I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And thinking back, I was always fascinated by art. And anytime we were tasked with doing some sort of art type of project in high school, total focus, total like dive right into it all the way in, take it to the next level every time, But then it was like, then I'd leave school and right back to the other distractions, you know? Yeah. So it took
prison to like suck that out of you, so to speak.
Well, yeah, because in there you have no distractions at all.
Yeah.
So like when you dive into something, you can dive all the way into it.
Yeah. So you started drawing with this pencil kit. Like what was that? Was it immediate when you started doing it? Like, yeah, this is my thing. This is going to be the way I'm going to.
I kind of floundered because I was still trying to find myself in there. I just started getting into working out. So that was kind of a little bit of a distraction. And then I got my security level got downgraded. So then I got moved, shipped up to Duluth, which is a camp. It's like a low security institution. Hmm. Basically just has a chain link fence around the place. You can like walk away anytime if you wanted to. Well, so then there I'm just like trying to find my routine. Because everybody thrives on routines, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find my day-to-day routine, get a job while I was doing. So I started doing the pencil portraits in my back in my room again. And they had a hobby craft there, and I went over there, and there was this guy painting. His name was Justin. He ended up becoming like a good friend of mine and also my mentor, basically.
Wow. Nice.
But he was doing these paintings, and he had a bunch of them there in the hobby craft room, and I was just like, oh my gosh, these things are amazing. They're like these very colorful figurative paintings that he was basically just copying other artists, because that's all you really have in there is books and magazines. So,
right.
You know, so I just was kind of watching what he was doing, and then was doing more of these pencil portraits, and then I just excelled what I feel is very quickly at that, to the point where like the pencil portraits they look like a black and white photograph. Basically,
yeah.
They're so like perfectly drawn.
Wow.
So I brought one of those over to him, and I was like, hey, man, I'd like to know how to get going on oil painting because this stuff looks really cool. Here's some of my drawings. You know, I have ability. Can you tell me what to do? He's like, I said, can you help me? He's like, I'm not going to help you, but I'll tell you. I'll give you some direction, you know.
Yeah.
That's when he told me to get the Bob Ross Joy painting book.
No kidding.
No kidding. Nope.
So explain to everybody who that is.
Bob Ross painted on typically like the public access channel.
Yeah.
Most people
do with the huge fro.
Huge afro, has a very calming monotone voice. Most people would use him to like go to sleep at night. but yeah, everybody's like, oh, I remember him when I was watching him when I was little.
Yeah.
You know, he's an interesting fellow, but his system is very, very simple, and it teaches you a lot of very, very useful, like fundamental tools, you know, color mixing, how to use a painting knife, how to paint wet into wet with oil paint, which I started using oil paint right away.
Right.
A lot of people are scared of oil paint because it doesn't dry right away, but that's why it's so awesome, you know?
Huh.
So I bought his book and started doing Bob Ross paintings. And early on, around that same time, I had read somewhere, you know, in a magazine that, if you learn how to paint, you can paint whatever the heck you want. I don't care what it is. People are always like, I want to paint portraits before they've ever painted anything. And then those are the people that get discouraged and give it up and sell all their painting supplies, because it just doesn't happen like that, you know. So I forced my way through like 20 or 30 of those Bob Ross paintings. They were cool at first because it was immediate results.
Yeah.
Very first painting, I still have it sitting here on my table. It's like the first painting, it's like, wow, that looks good. I can do this, you know. And then the next painting, same thing. Wow. It's encouraging.
Yeah.
And it gives you like, a path, you know, to follow.
Yeah.
Whereas like, if you were just a lot of people like, I don't know what I want to paint. I don't know what to do, how to start. Well, Bob Ross, I always don't get that because in his book, there'll be the picture of the painting. Then there'll be step-by-step photo instructions.
Right.
Also, step-by-step written instructions along with the materials list, the list of colors, and all that stuff. So
that's awesome.
So if you just follow along. So, and then I had Justin there who would come, you know, he would offer some hands-on help every so often, right at the beginning especially. But then, you know, he was he's an interesting character. He was kind of like an acquired taste type of guy. Not very many people liked him because he was just, you know, he was good at everything he did. He had like an engineer's mind. That's what he went to school for. So problem solving.
Yeah.
And when he would look at, a painting in a magazine and be like, how is this guy getting the paint to do those effects right there? I have to know. Hmm. And he would figure it out.
Interesting.
So therefore, if he figured it out and he did it on its own, he wasn't going to give it away to me for free.
Right.
I would have to work for it. He would watch me massacre a portrait for 8 straight hours all day long. And then finally he would put his brush down and he'd walk over and pick up my brush and then, you know, mix up some color and be like, bing,
yeah.
You know, mix up another stroke, bing, 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 bing.
Huh.
And 5 to 10 strokes, he'd step back. There you go.
Wow.
Like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
In 5 strokes, how did you just make my painting work? You know, he's like, well, you did all the hard work. I just came and put a little butter on it, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was the most, like, instruction that he would ever give me. Mostly it was just leading by example. I was watching what he was doing next to me, you know?
Interesting.
So
how did this lead into Adam Carter and what happened in 2006?
You know, I started painting portraits, and then my cousin Adam had leukemia that he had been battling on and off for a while, and which he ended up losing the battle. And my mom was like, oh, you know, she's seen the portrait that I was sending home. Do you think there's any way that you could paint, you know, Adam's picture for Christmas for Auntie Mary? I'm like, sure, because, you know, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I paint portraits now. So so I did, and, they delivered it to her on Christmas. It was the first Christmas without him. And it was a really big moment in our family. So, through that process, you know, my Aunt Mary had become more spiritual, and eventually she found herself, I don't remember if it was watching a news story or sitting and, you know, watching TV or reading a newspaper story. Well, anyways, there was a story about a girl from her area that had lost the battle to cancer also.
Yeah.
Her name was McKenna Johnson. And she was just like, Mike, it came to me. These people need a portrait of their daughter just like the one that you did of Adam for me.
Wow.
Because every day I get to see it, and every day it just like makes me so happy, and I think they need one also. If I get a picture, can send it to you? Can you paint it for me?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sure, send it up here.
Right.
So I did, and she did. Well, she's a realtor, so she can get anybody's address and phone number. And so she just calls these people up and is like, hey, my name is Mary Carter. I've been following McKenna's story. I promise I'm not a crazy person, but I have a gift for you. Do you mind if I stop by? And they were like, sure, come over. So they're waiting for her on the front doorstep, and she shows up with the painting in a box, you know, in a bag or whatever. And she just starts, you know, talking about the gift and how she was given, you know, it was given to her one day, and
right.
How much it means to her, and then, you know, presents him with the painting. So,
wow.
You know, just totally out of the blue, random, they have no idea it's coming. That ignited what, you know, what then became the Adam Carter Foundation, because after she did that one, she's like, I can't wait to do another one.
I see,
you know?
Yeah.
So.
Were you close to Adam, first of all?
No, sadly. My lifestyle and just my centered selfishness and everything, I basically completely alienated myself from even my closest family.
What type of fulfillment, you know, describe your emotions when you went from that point of realizing, like, you know, if I just waste talent sitting here in prison, that's a waste, but I could put this to use, find a purpose, and now I'm actually fulfilling and actually healing scars of people that have lost their children. How did that make you feel with regards to your purpose?
All I'm painting is just really, at that time, just pretty pictures.
Yeah.
That's all they are. Hmm. You know, there's no meaning behind them. And so I was aware that, like, if you want to make more, have more behind the art, like, it has that meaning to it usually.
Yeah.
So my roommate at the time, who was actually one of my closest friends, was an older gentleman by the name of Fred, who he's also part of the foundation. He does the... So the first painting, it just felt incomplete as a painting. So I was like, hey, this guy is the most phenomenal creative writer I've ever met and seen write. And so I was like, hey, can you write like a little eulogy or like a little, just a little message to go along with this piece about it and the person in it?
Yeah.
And so he did. And now since since then. He's done one for every single painting that we've delivered.
Yeah.
A personalized message that, you know, I'll give them all the information I know about the person, if they're spiritual or they're in the kid's interests or anything, and then he'll weave that into the story. And so, you know, me and him were brainstorming in the dorm like we always were, and he's like, well, you could make this into a nonprofit and do this full time if you wanted to, and, you know, generate a living off of it, you know. So then, you know, that I had that in mind, and, you know, they're just, yeah, giving more, having purpose in life, never had it. You know, once I discovered art, I finally, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up? I had never had any idea.
Yeah.
Until I discovered painting. And then right then, once I got good at it and really, like, I did nothing but paint in there.
Yeah.
Wake up, go work out, eat, shower, and then paint all day.
Yeah.
Every day for, you know, the last 7 years of my prison sentence.
Yeah.
You know, reading and studying it, you know, and that's where I worked in the painting department. So, like, I was there regardless every day. So,
here's,
you know,
two quick questions for you. First one is pretty easy. Is painting your purpose? And secondly, if you came across people maybe that you're mentoring in prison or even now that are struggling with finding purpose, what do you tell them?
That you need to find what it is that, like, excites you and gives, adds value to your own life or others, and try to first figure out what that is, because a lot of people are just don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, and with today's just like the opportunity now because of the internet, and like you can make a career on almost anything through social media, and just there's so much opportunity, it's ridiculous. And like people just don't realize that sometimes. They think it's so, you know, so hard to be an artist, and to make it, it's hard because anything worth doing is going to be hard.
Yeah.
But like you can do it. It can be done, you know? So yeah, I just like, future, you know, artists or people that are already on that art path, I just try to foster that and give them as much knowledge as I can, because like that's another thing that's missing in this, you know, is just educating and helping each other out, especially in the art world. There's very little reciprocation amongst peers.
Yeah,
I've noticed. So I always go out of my way to be the complete opposite. You know, I'll give out any information, anytime, always, to anybody, even if they're my competition direct.
Yeah,
I will still help them out and help them be successful, because I mean, just gotta start somewhere.
Listening to you talk, it was, you know, you said something I think was really profound. You said, up until I started painting portraits and then giving them away, it was just kind of pretty pictures. And again, I'm just talking out loud here, piecing this together. It seemed like your purpose really became full circle when it became about giving those away and serving other people. Would you agree with that? Am I interpreting that correctly?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's more than just the paintings, though.
Right.
It's giving away everything everything, my time, my materials, my knowledge. Like, I work with, I work with a high school out in Chaska, the Integrated Arts Academy. You know, it's a former ALC, you know, it's an art elect high school. They have no money, budget is very, like, next to nothing, and a whole ton of talented kids there, but they don't have money for supplies and this and that. So, you know, they did a workshop here in my studio. We burned through probably $500 in my oil paint.
Yeah.
I just let them use,
Yeah.
But through that ended up, their main takeaway was not having to worry about how much paint they are using. It was like the most freeing feeling they've ever experienced with art.
Hmm.
And it's like the right there, it was worth it. I made them give the paintings to the school does an art gala. So all the paintings they did in my workshop, 20 of them went to the art gala for sale for $40 each, including the two demos that I did, which raffled off at $600 each. So through that thing, they raised $2,000 for the school. You know,
would this be a fair statement? And again, I'm just trying to navigate through this from a listener standpoint, even from a personal standpoint, a person who, you know, is trying to encourage people to live with purpose. Is your purpose actually more into the giving and the teaching and the healing? And then the art is kind of just the tool,
my,
I guess, so to speak.
Vehicle,
would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, totally.
Interesting. Now, that is really cool because, like,
well,
I said,
here's the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
My prior life, all I did was take, and go against the grain.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, that's not working for me. Let's do it the other way.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was very, very selfish.
Hmm.
You know, it was always me first. And, you know, it's tough because the artist lifestyle is very, very reflective of that same lifestyle, because I, you know, there's a lot about being an artist that you do alone, you know.
Yeah.
Spending inordinate amounts of hours in the studio working, you know, instead of dedicating that to, you know, a relationship or something like that.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Interesting.
But I still get to inspire people and move people and give back to people. So it's, you know.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And the more I talk to you, I think that if I could, you know, summarize it or put it in a box, that is your purpose. It seems like the arts is just, like you said, kind of your vehicle. Talk more about the Adam Carter Foundation, what it does exactly, and then we'll kind of wrap it up with the legacy talk. What exactly is the Adam Carter Foundation?
So I paint portraits of children that have lost their lives to cancer. And then we deliver them to the families, as a surprise gift. And they remain a surprise until the delivery date.
Wow.
If we were to say, you know, maybe, yes, we could probably do a picture, you know, a portrait, and then they can't produce a quality enough photo, which is common, and you can't get another one, obviously, then it's like, now how do you break that to them?
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's like a double whammy, like, oh, sorry, we actually can't do it.
Yeah.
So if we get contacted by people and we agree to do something for them, it's like, we're very strict about that, just because, it just works out better that they don't know it's coming.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Also, then I'm not, you know, because sometimes the picture is just, the quality is no good, or it's just a boring, like, school photo. They work, but they're not the greatest artistically. So sometimes I'm just not feeling it. So they sit on my shelf forever.
Right.
Until, like, I'll pick it up one day and I'll see the color or something in it, like, oh, and something else, you know, in my mind will click. And I'm like, oh, my God, that blue or something. Oh, that's what I'm going to do with this thing.
Yeah.
And I'll paint it, and it'll turn out great. Hmm. If I force my way through them, then 9 times out of 10, they're not, like, you know, me feeling it's, like, my best work. My mom and my aunt are always like, oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you always hold yourself or critique yourself more than anybody else. But
that is awesome. Here's a question for you. What does legacy mean to you? Just that word, not necessarily yours, but legacy. What does that mean to you?
Leaving the world a better place than, you know, than it was when you were around, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why, you know, I would love to be able to do it more often, but, you know, it doesn't always pay for the rent.
right.
Unfortunately, so that stuff always kind of trumps the foundation work, you know. So it's amazing. And then, like, sometimes quite a bit of time will pass, you know, between paintings, and I'll kind of forget that feeling, and then I'll do another one, and it's like, oh my gosh, like, why haven't I got to do more of these, you know? It's a good feeling. I never go along with that on the delivery, but, you know, I always get the information from my mom and my aunt.
What do you want to be remembered for?
My amazing smile. I'm just kidding. No. Just being a good instructor.
Yeah.
You know, giving, I don't know, like, one of my favorite artists, he runs his own little school down in California somewhere, and, you know, one of his sayings, which I've adopted, is just, you know, it's like, yeah, I could spend my whole life making and creating great art, but I would actually rather spend my whole life creating great artists.
Right.
Because that lives on longer than anything, the knowledge and just the value you're adding to other people's lives is, you know, worth way more than any painting could be valued at.
Yeah,
so
that is awesome. That is awesome. Michael, I really appreciate your story, your openness, honesty, and I think that you have a phenomenal platform to inspire a lot of people to leave a legacy and live a life of purpose. Well, I sure hope you enjoyed this conversation with artist Michael Bellotti. I told you he had quite a story. If you want more information on Michael Bellotti and his Adam Carter Foundation, go to bellottiart.com. Well, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Repurpose. Just a reminder, this podcast is based on a book by Ben Tejas called Repurpose, The Untold Story of Retirement in America. It's all about finding and redefining your purpose once you retire. It's endorsed by Dave Ramsey. We're very proud of that. If you want the first two chapters of that book totally free, just go to our website, tejasfinancial.com, and click on Heard Us on the Radio for your free gift just for listening here today. As always, a big thanks to Faith Radio for helping us sponsor this program. If you missed any or all of this episode, visit myfaithradio.com to hear or download the podcast there. I'm Jared Sebesta. We'll see you next time on Repurposed.